Welcome to Ask Kaleffi, the podcast that dives into real-life problems that plumbing and HVAC technicians face in the field. We're your hosts from the Kaleffi Tech Support Team. I'm Greg Tubbs.
And I'm Dan Furkus. Welcome. We look forward to sharing some stories from our tech calls and using our background and expertise to make your days a little easier.
Welcome back. Here we are, episode 6. We're talking about balancing valves.
Yeah, there's some excitement.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions about balancing valves.
We do get a lot of questions, and I think one of the most common questions is if a guy knows he needs to balance a system, what kind of balancing valve should I use?
Right, yeah.
And it always depends, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, there's no wrong answer.
Definitely not.
You know, there's different answers for that question. There's really no wrong answer.
Yeah, I mean, really, we got to go down the road of finding out what the application is, if you're doing hydronic heating or if you're doing domestic hot water recirc.
Yeah, exactly. The other question I get a lot is, do I really need a balancing valve?
Yeah.
Or why do I need a balancing valve?
And you and I both came from a heating background, and let's be honest, we didn't do a whole lot of balancing when it came to like baseboards and radiators. But when we did in-floor tubing, you know, when we did manifolds, those would get balanced.
Those would get balanced.
You had no reason not to. You had balancing valves right there on the manifold.
Right, right, exactly. You know, but when you look at, you know, do I need balancing valves or don't I, you got to remember water is going to take the path of least resistance.
Always does. It's lazy. It does what it wants.
Exactly. So you look at a domestic hot water system with multiple branches and circuits. I mean, not uncommon with improperly balanced or a system with no balancing to have dead legs in the building, you know, places where Legionella can grow. It's just
sure
not efficient.
Well, and it makes sense too, even if we look at a hydronic heating system, say it's a baseboard system and you have closer baseboards that, you know, if they're not all run in one big series loop,
right?
If they're parallel piped off of a loop, then that's where balancing could be a huge benefit.
Right. That's where it's really important.
It's very important.
You know, you could have a short run in a small baseboard, you know, getting all the flow, and you have a longer run or maybe a circuit for a living room or bedroom with maybe a couple of baseboards in it, and you're not getting flow there because
right.
It's all running through a short, closed circuit.
Yeah. I mean, I had a house that way where the master bedroom was the last on the loop, and because it was piped in series, one big series loop, it was always the coldest water.
Right.
So it took forever for that to warm up.
Right. So if they had parallel piped it and balanced it, you could efficiently heat all of the space.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't lose all your BTUs before you got to that.
So
yeah, so that, I mean, that's really a, you know, the big purpose for balancing is to ensure that the water goes where it needs to go.
Yeah, and unfortunately, as we said, balancing is always neglected or overlooked. Is it important? Absolutely.
Right. Could be one of your biggest callbacks is an unbalanced system. And, you know, boy, if you didn't put those valves in, you'll wish you had.
So, yeah, now we can talk about the different kinds of balancing valve. You know, we got manual, which are a pressure-dependent static-type valve. We have pressure-independent and automatic dynamic right. valve.
Yeah, or thermostatic with our thermal setter. That's our thermostatic valve.
Right. All these have a place. Or maybe even you're just comfortable with one particular type of valve.
Right. Well, and maybe with the exception of thermostatic, yes. You know, automatic or manual can both fit the same application, you know, given you know your exact design. I mean, there's going to be specifics that are going to determine whether you're going to go manual or thermostatic. But when you look at the manual valves, you know, that's the pressure-dependent static valves.
Yep.
I mean, those are going to be the valves with that require the most setup.
They are, because you got to set them up. Basically, you'll set one, move on to the next, you know, depending on how many circuits you have. But say you have 20 circuits, you're probably going to end up going back and forth in between them, because every time you adjust a manual valve, it's at one setting. And when you're setting it at one setting, you're allowing more push to another circuit.
Right.
And as you get that balance down, then you increase your...
Yeah, well, being pressure dependent, I mean,
yep.
they're dependent on the pressure behind them. So mm-hmm. as you make changes down the line, you're going to change that pressure, which is going to change your differential pressure, which is going to change your flow rate. So it takes a little bit more fine tuning to balance a system with manual. Really commonly chosen. They've been around for decades. They're the most inexpensive. They fit hydronic or plumbing applications.
Right. They don't have moving parts in them. They don't have a moving cartridge that floats or anything like that.
Right. Right. They're pre-adjusted. Well, not pre-adjusted. They're adjusted on site.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they require, like you had mentioned, the most amount of effort to set up. I mean, it's going to require you to have the flow characteristic chart for the valve. And those are valve specific. I mean, you could have a number of different balancing valves in your system, you know, and you're going to need a flow characteristic chart for each of the models. So, you know, it's really tough for a balancing crew to come in and, you know, make sure that they have the right information and they're using it at the right time.
Right. And all of those characteristics are on a flow chart that comes with our products.
Right.
You know, the 142 or the 130, those are the most commonly used, at least out of that family in our product, or the 132.
132, sure.
But those have a flow characteristic chart that you can go through the product literature and find that chart. And then the balancing guy has to follow that chart and
yeah, and there'll be a different chart for the half inch versus the three quarter, 1 inch, or yep, all the way up to 2 inch.
Right.
It's going to require a tool. It's going to need a manometer or pressure differential gauge.
Yep. Pressure differential meter to be able to read that and make the adjustments accordingly.
Yeah. You'll use that and get your delta P, your pressure differential across the valve, you know, that'll give you your pressure drop. You take that back to your flow characteristic chart, and then you'll have to watch your meter and your chart to get your differential pressure to match design flow rate. That's going to be the indicator of what the flow rate is going right through them.
And typically that's a subcontractor that comes in, and that's all he does is balancing, unless you're blessed enough to have the tools and the knowledge and certifications to do system balancing.
Yeah, there's a lot of actually jurisdictions or municipalities that require you to bring in a third-party balancing contractor. So, you know, you think about that. That saves money up front on the balancing valve, but then if you have to bring that third-party contractor in, there's going to be some additional cost in scheduling there.
Right, right.
You know, certain municipalities won't even allow the installer to put to balance the system.
Right. So pay me now or pay me later.
Right.
You still got there is a cost to it.
Well, and you look at, you know, down the line, if you ever add on to that system with the manual balancing valve, you may have to rebalance that entire system to do that. You might have to change a pump. You might have to change some piping, and you can do that to get, you know, the increased flow rate that you need. But then when it comes to balancing it, you may have to go back to each independent balancing valve and make adjustments to add for that.
No doubt. You're definitely having to go back and do all that.
Yeah, but we simplified that.
We did simplify that. I really like the 132 Quick Setter product.
I do too.
I mean, you go in, you have your system all hooked up, you pull the pin, you make the adjustment on the ball valve, and you set it to where you need it and drop the pin, and you can easily go back and forth between them to get everything dialed in without hooking a meter to it.
Right. Yeah. It has the bypass or the pressure ports like the 142 or 130 series. So it has that, but instead of requiring the manometer to check your differential pressure, it has that flow meter built right onto it.
Right.
So like Greg said, you know, you want to size the valves so that your flow rate is somewhere in the middle of the flow gauge. You know, so if you have a 3 to 10 GPM 1 inch valve and flow meter, you're going to want to make sure that you're putting that into a system that's, you know, maybe 4 to 8 GPM, so that
right,
you're adjusting somewhere in the middle. That's where you get your most accuracy.
Right. You want to be in the middle. It's going to be better than operating at the bottom end or the top end of that valve.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're wanting 9 GPM and it's a 10 GPM flow meter, you might be better off to go up to 1.25 inches, where now you're working more in the middle. You're going to be more accurate.
Sure. And, you know, if it's going in a 1 inch line, you can always bush it down from the 1.25 body to a 1 inch pipe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Can you put those in any direction, Greg?
Just about any direction, as long as the flow direction is correct. And we really don't want to see you install it where the flow meter is facing down. The reason being, that flow meter bypass will act as a sediment trap. So if you have, you know, anything in the water, sand, any kind of debris. I mean, I've actually gotten some of these back where there's been magnetite stuck in them. Hard to believe, but a little shreds of thread tape.
Right.
So solder.
Yeah. I mean, it's approved to be installed that way, but I mean, you certainly run a higher risk of getting some debris
right
in that.
And we have a real good way of cleaning it out. I mean, you can disconnect that flow meter and do a flush on it too to clean it out if need be.
Yeah, it's easy enough to do that. You know, the benefit with that is in the future, if you ever have to add a circuit, you know, ensuring that your pump and your flow rate and piping is capable of handling the additional circuit, it's really easy to set that up, and you can go back down the line, pull a pin on any of the valves behind it, check the flow rate, make adjustments if you need to. You don't need to bring in a third-party contractor or any additional tools. It's really simple.
Right.
Makes life easy.
Certainly does. So from them, we go to the automatic pressure-independent dynamic balancing valves. Those have moving parts.
They do.
Typically, it's a cartridge with a spring in it. It's got a flow indication in it that, you know, it's sized accordingly.
It's sized in a pressure differential range.
Right.
You know, and those you need to be more accurate in your calculations, because you're ordering those based on a preset flow rate.
It's specified. So the engineer will specify in the blueprint what exactly each circuit needs for flow.
Right. So you'll order that, you know, like our 127 flow cals are available as low as 0.35 GPM or as high as 10 gallons per minute. I mean, you order it specifically at a set flow rate. And as long as you're within a set pressure differential for that flow rate, it will maintain that evenly.
Yeah.
You know, the flow rate may change a little bit, you know, if the pressure differential gets above or below the chart, but once you're in that pressure differential, that spring will regulate the flow through it to maintain a set GPM.
Exactly. It's opening and closing that characterized opening in that cartridge.
Yeah. So, I mean, easy to install, really no setup.
No setup. Very easy. I mean, not much labor at all. We will have people ask us, you know, can PT ports be installed? Not on the valve body itself, but I have seen companies actually put PT ports before and after, because again, some municipalities require, even though it's indicated and certified that it is what we're saying it is, they right. still want to check it.
Yeah. And that gives you the ability to do that.
Yep.
Nice thing about them is, you know, if you ever do need to make a change or add something to your system, you can order a new cartridge, or you can order an additional cartridge at the set flow rate you need. But then if you find something changes, you can order a replacement flow cartridge.
Right.
And just swap the cartridge out inside the body to change the flow rate.
Right. It's real simple. It makes it so much easier if one does get broken or one gets clogged up because the water quality is really poor. It's a very serviceable item.
Yeah, it is. Easy replacement.
So from there, I'm kind of excited about this. We're going to talk about the thermostatic.
Yeah, our 116 thermal setter.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so excited about that one, but other than it's different, kind of a problem solver valve in some cases. Yeah,
it's a temperature solution for a temperature problem.
It certainly is.
Yeah, thermostatic. So basically what you'll do is you'll set what you want your temperature of your recirc return loop to be. And this is only approved for domestic applications. This is not rated for an hydronic application.
No, you wouldn't use it in a hydronic application.
Right. But essentially, you're going to set your design temperature, lock the knob in place so that it can't be changed, and install it. And again, you can adjust it in place, or you can preset it and install it. And then what that valve's going to do is it's going to modulate the flow rate based on the temperature.
Right. And it does that with a little wax-filled temperature-sensitive bulb that expands and contracts, just like in a thermostatic mixing valve. Right. It opens and closes to allow water flowing through to achieve that temperature setting, whether it's 110 or 120. Once it achieves that, then it closes down as far as it can, and then it'll then allow that water in the system to move on to
right.
the next
yeah,
circuit.
It'll slow down to a real minimal, real slow flow rate. It's always moving water past it, and it has to continue to sense temperature in
right,
that loop.
Right. It gets down to 0.2 2-3 CV, I believe.
It does. It's a smaller
model. Yeah, so it just lets it trickle through. It does not close off 100%.
Right, right. What's really nice about that is it works really well with a variable drive pump, you know, like a Delta P pump. By throttling up and down, it's going to allow, you know, I mean, you think of a building with 6 circuits in it and 6 thermal setters. You know, your first one's going to come up to temperature the quickest. You know, initially, they'll all be open as far as they can go. Your path of least resistance typically is going to be your closest circuit. So as that one comes up to temperature, it's going to restrict flow, and then the flow is going to go out to the remaining.
Right.
And then the next one's going to close, and it's going to go out to the next, to the remaining. And it's going to do that until all the loops are satisfied. So, you know, you look at a variable drive Delta P pump, you know, you can, once all the circuits are satisfied and you're at minimum flow, that pump's going to throttle back down and really do some, really provide some energy savings.
Right. Yeah. Once it gets that loop up to temperature, or that riser, that particular area up to temperature, it throttles down. And like you said, it's doing what it needs to do with allowing water to move on to the next leg.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it just changes the path of least resistance so until all of them are even and inconsistent, eliminating dead legs or cold risers.
Sure. Well, I think we did a pretty good job of covering the types of valves here and gave some pretty good information.
Yeah. You know, I look at all of our valves are serviceable. All of them can be maintained. You know, like any product, you know, they will in time require maintenance because water quality has an effect on anything. You know, our thermostatic bypass or thermostatic valves that we just talked about, we do have replaceable cartridges for now. So easy to rebuild those in place if you need to, if you have a harsh water quality.
Right. And we have a couple different models too. I mean, if you're doing thermal disinfection, we have two models that'll work for that. One has a thermostatic bypass cartridge in it for when it gets up to temp for thermal shocking.
Disinfection. Yep. Sure.
It'll do that manually. But then we also offer another model that you can attach one of our thermal heat motors to. And that can be hooked to a building management system.
Right. It'll open that bypass cartridge at a set time based on your management system.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, so you can still get thermal disinfection with that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, yeah, so next week we're going to talk about backflow preventers.
Yeah, why is that backflow preventer dripping? That's a question I get all the time.
Yeah, so stay tuned. We'll talk about that. Thank you for tuning in. If you ever need help,
please feel free to contact our tech support team anytime at techsupport.us@kaleffi.com.
Or call us during our business hours at 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Central Time at 414-238-2360.